Welcome to the Florida Madcaps, your ultimate guide to experiencing fantastic and unique destinations across our magnificent state. Join us while we lead you on a journey of exploration, recreation, and conservation. The popularity of Florida's natural wonders is on the rise, and our mission is to be your go-to source for conscientious recreation. We encourage you to get out and explore these breathtaking sites, and to leave them even better than you found them, through individual actions and group advocacy. Join the Florida Madcaps as we discover the beauty of our incredible state together.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Florida Madcaps podcast. It's me, Ryan, aka the Florida Excursionist, and I'm here with the Florida famous, the hiking duo, the Sunshine State Seekers.
Hiking trio at the moment.
I know, man.
I got bun still in the oven. We'll see how he feels when he comes out, how much he's into the hiking. But
Yes. I have to say, we're still doing some outdoor adventures. Chelsea is an example of perseverance. Before we go any further, our partner, the Florida Springs Council, we want to mention them as they are fighting for the springs. Actually, right now, they're engaged in a couple of important legal battles. They also allow you, too, to advocate for the springs. You can sign up at floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. When you do that, they'll send you a free sticker. Normally, at their events, they'll charge for it. Then you too can advocate for the springs and make a difference.
I didn't know they partnered with you two.
The band?
That's a beautiful spring.
Look at Chelsea.
Don't let the fertilizer make it turn green. That doesn't quite rhyme, but.
Don't let it turn green.
Oh, we're going to stop this podcast session and turn it into a recording session. All right. So kind of speaking of springs, we're talking about the area of Palatka today. And there's some springs around there in the St. John's, but I think specifically we're going to be talking about the Steephead Springs of Ravine Gardens. Palatka, it was a trading post in the early 1800s and was burned down during the Seminole Wars in 1936 when there were a lot of string of attacks when the Second Seminole War was starting. 2 years later, a fort, Fort Shannon, was constructed there. And then later on, it became a tourist destination as the steamboats were making their way down the St. John's before the railways, I think, were widespread. Today, there's a lot of things to see there. I really enjoy it because it's a small town, but you have access to a lot of state parks in the area that are pretty cool. Ravine Gardens is a little over 150 acres, but it's a state park, but it's small. But there's so much packed into it, isn't there?
Yeah, it's like a spring and botanical garden, lots of old structures. I think we were talking earlier, we were looking into CCC properties, and it's very reminiscent of those kind of properties built in that time, but it itself is not a CCC property, correct?
Yes. Actually, I think it took off a little bit before some of the CCC parks and was later turned over to the state, but it was done by the Civil Works Administration, and they used relief funds. So basically, a very similar theme. They're taking money, and they're putting people to work. And you have this Steephead Spring that flows into the St. John's, and they really went to work there. And today, it's still magnificent. What's really known for is its azaleas. There's 18 different kinds. They planted over 40,000 of them. All up and down the slopes there. And the elevation, I was surprised when I was looking at the numbers, because I know from hiking there, there's significant elevation changes, but it goes between like 70 up to 120 feet of elevation in like such a small park.
It's an interesting feature of these ravines. And there are quite a few like parks and state forests and stuff that have recreation areas that are built around hiking up and down these ravines.
Yeah. Goldhead. Isn't Sharktooth Spring in Seminole State Forest? That's a Steephead Spring, isn't it?
I would say.
Yeah. So in the Steephead Spring, Chris, talk about that a little bit. What makes a Steephead Spring?
Well, I understand that it's the kind of where the water hits the impermeable layer. It goes through all this sand, and Florida's, you know, famous for having most of their soil is very sandy, and the water just drops right through until it gets to like a clay, or they call it a hard pan, I think, as well. And once it hits that, it can't really go any further down. So it starts moving sideways until it finds some sort of a way to get out. And over time, just kind of creates this ravine because it's the water's flowing basically out of the side of a hill.
Yeah. So instead of coming up from the aquifer, we got it's coming, you know, kind of outside of an embankment. And also, I just want to add this. We are recording at the Sunshine State Seeker's house, and we've been going on some adventures this weekend. So instead of hearing like the baying hound dog or grandfather clock at my house or the occasional bee buzzing by, we have guinea pigs.
Very vocal. They're thirsty for water and attention.
But yeah, so the Stevehead Spring, it goes through, and man, did they do a great job, because it just winds through the park. There's suspension bridges, there's bridges, there's these trails. So it's, even though it's a small park, they really pack in all these trails going up and down the embankments, and it's extremely dense with vegetation.
So that bridge is still there, the swing bridge?
Yes, there's two suspension bridges. The most notable one is where you have the Steephead Spring, kind of the water flows through the park, and as it starts to exit, there's kind of like a pond there, and the suspension bridge goes over the pond, and it's really iconic. And there's another one that goes along the spring run there. They're both a lot of fun, and they're definitely some photo spots.
It's definitely popular. So a fun fact about me is I used to live in Palatka for a very short period of time. I went to Florida School of Art and Design there. And I would say that is a very popular park for like graduation photos, wedding photos, very, very popular Instagram photo spot, which wasn't around when I lived there. But I didn't get to go there because none of the people I knew about it. And I always lament that I was a different person at 19 than I am today. And the person I am today would have absolutely loved living in Palatka. But the person I was at 19 didn't know what was around there, didn't quite appreciate it. And the Ravine Gardens is just one of the many spots I wish I knew of at the time.
It's famous for its azaleas, too,
yes.
Right?
Yes, and I think that's one of the reasons it's such a popular photo destination.
Between January and March is when they're in bloom. And if you look at the park website, they'll tell you what percentage are in bloom. And usually late January, early February. And it just depends on the weather and a number of factors. If you get there at the peak bloom time, it is a sight to behold.
Is that around March that most of the azaleas bloom?
I think so. I've been January to March timeframe, depending on like weather conditions. Also, the trails are neat, and I'm always impressed because they're extremely prone to erosion, and that's something they're always trying to control there.
Yeah, I've noticed that especially. You can tell spots where people have gone down to access the water points, and that's a problem with any kind of environment like this. I would say Goldhead State Park being a similar issue, where it's a lots of these steep heads and these like deep ravines where people go down in them to access the water. Some places have areas built in for you to do that, and that kind of keeps the erosion at bay. But a lot of these places, they really don't want you doing that. It's more for looking at.
Yes. And that is a culture shift, I think, with Florida State Parks, because I think early on they were more towards the recreation point. And I can say specifically at Goldhead, there were some spots that were not officially designated, but you can tell they're widely used for hanging out in the branch. The branch is the stream that comes from the Steephead Spring. It's clear, it's cold, it's beautiful. But now they definitely do not want people there. It causes erosion. It harms the local environment. But since that culture was there for so long and kind of passed down, like, yeah, when I was a kid, I did play in the branch. But now it's just not a good idea. Same thing with Ravine Gardens. It's very accessible because that stream just runs right along the paths. It's beautiful. There's little waterfalls here and there. And I mean small ones. Mm-hmm. Really has dense vegetation. So all the ferns growing up along the hillside.
It's a very, nice canopy. I was going to say there's a lot of mossy covered structures and stuff from the moisture that the canopy kind of holds in. Makes it very beautiful.
I just kind of remembered one interesting feature, because that obviously was one of the stops where we got our passports at. But I remember pulling in and seeing into the parking lot and seeing the trellises. Yeah, there was a bunch of trellises or something, a big line of them, and each one was dedicated to a different state.
Yeah.
It was kind of a...
Yeah, that's something I didn't notice when I was there. Dedicated to a different state, huh?
Yeah, each one had like a different state name on it, and it was this sort of big, long monument.
And I think that when we were there, there were people doing their graduation photos right under those trellises.
Oh, yeah. it's a big photo spot. It's a big wedding spot too. Because when you walk in, they have that long line or lawn with the different fountains that are going down and mm-hmm. the trellises. And they, what is that? It's an obelisk near the end. It is the same shape as the Washington Monument.
Yes.
And I'm not sure what that is called. But yeah, it's a lot of the limestone construction that you see in a lot of the CCC parks. That is present in Ravine Gardens as well. And the Bartram Trail runs through it.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. They do have a park drive that kind of circles. I'm not sure if they allow vehicles on it now or not, but it's almost 2 miles. I think it's like.
I recall saying something about that, yeah. But I don't know.
I don't think we did it. Yeah. But we definitely hiked all throughout.
At one point, it was one of the features, I think, that when it was a recreation area that you could drive around like a little safari, I guess.
Yeah, I think with Irma, part of it washed away and caved in, and they got closed. They do have almost like a concert green, mm-hmm. a reviewing area with these different steps with the limestone structure. It's a small park right there in downtown Palatka, but it is...
It's like right in the city.
Yeah.
There's so much... I've never seen so much packed into such a small park. But the other one we were talking about is Rice Creek.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely one of the most notable sections of the Florida National Scenic Trail. Mm-hmm. One, because of its extensive kind of catwalk. I think they call it a boardwalk, but it's...
Hoffman's Crossing.
Yeah, somewhat in between a catwalk and a boardwalk. What is how long is it? Do you remember?
It's kind of like similar to the one at...
Highlands Hammock?
Highlands Hammock. Are you talking about the catwalk there?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a little...
It's got a railing on one side. A little thinner than your typical, or more narrow than your typical boardwalk. But I believe it's like at least a half mile long. So yeah. It's incredibly...
Now, being this is just something to keep in mind when listening to this podcast, is being the nature of Florida is our storms and hurricanes. So sometimes the condition of the boardwalk or even the access to it at all is dependent on whether trees have fallen on it, waters and winds have damaged it. It's one of the sections of the Florida Trail that's in constant disrepair and maintenance going on to keep it up and going. But it's absolutely beautiful.
It's very swampy where the boardwalk goes through. Yeah,
there's a reason the boardwalk is there, and that's because if it wasn't, you'd be swimming like you do in some in some sections of the Florida Trail, anyways. But I think we did a hike across. I think that was also on the Florida Trail that did not have the boardwalk. That was a lot of it was underwater.
But on the north end, you've got I think 20, 30 little bridges, little walkways. So it's, I mean, super unique on the
north
end. And
they're numbered. I remember that being kind of a neat aspect of those bridges. Each bridge had a number on it. And from a maintenance perspective, that makes it easy mm-hmm. to say, oh, bridge 8 is down. We have to get some people out there to fix that one. Or, you know, you can let the community know which bridges are out, which ones are working. And all of them are because they've been repaired and built at different times, different styles. So some of them are more punch-in style, which is just basically large pieces of timber laying on the ground. Some of them are suspension bridge style. It just varies. And another cool, I guess, notable location in Rice Creek is the Rice Creek Hilton.
Yes. That's so the Florida Trail... Unlike other national scenic trails, well, I guess not many of them, actually. The Appalachian Trail probably sticks out as one that has a lot of shelters. The Florida Trail has a very small
like
number
three.
Of shelters. Yeah, it's maybe five.
Maybe a few more, yeah.
But the Rice Creek Hilton is a famous one that's like a two-story building that's screened in.
It's the and you have to be familiar with what I'm talking about to know what I'm talking about, but it's like the old school Appalachian Trail style shelter where it kind of looks like an arrow. It's got a narrow base and a pointy triangle top, mm-hmm. and you sleep in the top part, and the base is more of a screened in area where you can hang your packs, maybe prepare some food. Though it is advised to prepare all your food outside of the shelters. Not inside of them. But there's like, when you get up, there's a little ladder to crawl into the top and there's cushions. So two different sleeping areas. at the top. And it depends on what kind of hiker you are and what you're comfortable with. We usually do not stay in shelters. I kind of feel like they can be more invitations to locals to come party and stuff. Now, I didn't experience that there, so this is just my feelings. I'll stay a little bit further away from the shelters when I'm hiking and camping.
Mm. But it's an impressive structure for sure, and it's kind of right off the trail. There's a little side trail that goes to it. I recall there was some massive cypress trees in there too.
The seventh largest. There's like a boardwalk that goes out to an observation deck, and you're not right next to it. You kind of look through like a swamp, and you can see it in the background, and it is massive. It looks like part of it has broken off, and I assume it's still alive, but I couldn't get close enough to check. But the trunk, from what I could see, definitely stood apart.
A lot of the really old cypresses, especially in Florida, because of our hurricanes and the long life of these trees, like thousands of years, have the tops broken off like that, usually because of storms.
They should be a lot more common, but due to heavy forestation over 100 years ago, it was a lot of them were cut down and sent up river. So you don't see the old growth ones, but these could have been some massive trees. When you do get to see some of these rare large cypress ones and know that there could be a whole forest of these, it kind of breaks my heart. I hiked through there not too long ago, a few months ago, and somebody was staying in the old Hilton, so I didn't get a chance to go look at it. But it did look impressive just kind of glancing down the trail. I don't like being a creeper and like nosing around people's campsites or anything. If I see they're occupied, I give them a wide berth, as I wouldn't want to be disturbed if I'm, you know, pretty established.
Now, one of the things I love doing when we do come across the shelters is almost all of them will have a logbook. So you can open the logbook. And if you follow through hikers and stuff on their journeys, you'll see names pop up that you've heard, maybe on Instagram or Facebook or something like that. Or if you yourself are section hiking, you'll notice the same names from logbook to logbook to logbook. And they'll describe their experience that they had at the shelters. And some of them are a little more strange than others. I guess there's a tingling sound that happens in the nighttime there.
Yeah, that was when we were kind of looking through the logbook at the Rice Creek Hilton.
Yeah.
And someone was saying what a nice place it was to spend the night, but there's tingle noises coming from
the bushes or
direction northwest bearing or something. Like,
tingle? Like, yeah. Like a wind chime, I wonder?
I guess. I don't know. Maybe it was the skunk ape pinging up some yard decorations.
Actually, a control beam or something.
That, in that area, that's very close to Barden, so it would have been the Barden booger.
Oh, I haven't heard of the Barden booger.
He's not a Florida skunk ape level celebrity, but he is one of the few notable mysterious folks or creatures that wander around. The thing about the Barden booger that separates him from all the others is he always carries a lantern.
Hmm.
Yeah.
A tingling lantern?
I don't know if it tingles.
Maybe.
I'm looking at pictures. He is a little creepy. I'm glad I haven't ran across him on my adventures. He's more of a troll bear.
Mm. Yeah, the town of Barden is and I always drive by it. There's a store, and I think it has like a Barden Booger t-shirt. I got to go by and get it, but I never have before.
Yeah, that kind of looks like it could have easily been mistaken bear.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I've heard of a couple different descriptions of it, but evidently it's somewhat humanoid, so it carries a lantern. So if he smells, but he's carrying a lantern, that's the Barden booger. Anything else, it's the skunk ape. But I don't know if the skunk ape leaves the Everglades, you know, because that's where the headquarters is.
Yeah, right? You know, it's his home turf.
Yeah. Bartram Trail runs through there as well. And I guess I should have described this area earlier. The Bartram Trail is from the famed naturalist William Bartram, who went through Florida and wrote his travels. They do have an association. I did speak with some of the folks from them. It was very interesting as they're looking to get a good foothold. But it's important to keep in mind as well that Rice Creek is also named, I think it refers to a plantation that was there. And I believe it was in the 1700s, and it was rice. The other thing to keep in mind is when you're hiking along the Florida Trail in that area, there's a lot of nice bridges. You're also on some of the original earthworks that was created during that by the the plantation. And I have to assume that that was enslaved labor that created it. And
it
I don't
is Florida. So
yeah. And that's one thing I'm still struggling, like how, like, you know, I like to be mindful of it. And I think it's something that we should talk more about. You know, this type of history in Florida, surprisingly, is very contentious right now. But yeah, there are several areas where when you're hiking along that it was enslaved labor, you know, years ago that constructed maybe not the trail, but the earthworks that the trail is on. Yeah, because I saw another mailbox at one point of that trail.
Mm-hmm.
That had a logbook in it, and I signed it. So there's one thing that you guys mentioned to me, because I texted you when I saw it. Some people were leaving like granola bars and wrapped food and snacks in there, and you guys said that is a no-no.
No, do not leave food, at least unless there are certain instances where you can leave food on the trail, and that's, are you going to be there checking it all the time?
Okay.
Is it in a container that an animal can get in?
Mm-hmm.
Some of them you can, like, you can get something that's lockable, weather resistant, something like that, where the code is maybe shared online to hikers or on different apps in the hiker community for those who are passing through. The better thing to keep and stuff like that is maybe trash bags or a place to put garbage that hikers may find while hiking.
Yeah, leaving food is tricky at best. I mean, it's really, really difficult to be able to do that and not have it get spoiled or the animals get to it.
Now,
water jugs?
Yeah, water jugs. I was going to say, a lot of people, it's called a water cache. They'll leave those out for hikers. And there's even rules to that.
As long as you go back and get
you
the
wanna
container.
You want to be maintaining the water caches. And the water caches should be secured to something, tied down, because as we are Florida and we get a lot of storms, we can get flood waters pretty quick, carrying them away, wind carrying them away, hikers carrying them away and just throwing them in the bushes sometimes. So typically we ask that you put when the water was put there, the last time you maintained it. People usually just put this on a Sharpie on the bottle, so we know it's an up-to-date maintained thing for the hikers. Otherwise, they'll get removed, just because you don't want to add, you know, leave no trace. A lot of times they're also not directly on the trail. They're a little hidden because that's just an eyesore that takes away from the experience when you just see jugs all over the place. But water caches are an important aspect of hiking the Florida National Scenic Trail, especially in places like this that have ag runoff or just no water. I mean, there's a lot of water there, but you'd want to treat it. So this is an opportunity to get some clean water that you necessarily don't have to treat with chemicals or filter.
Yes. It's always a welcome sight for a thru hiker to find something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. A gallon jug or something?
Yeah.
Or like several gallons strung together.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're in a group called FT Thru Hike, where we help a lot of thru hikers. It's like a group of trail angels, and they keep an up-to-date log of where all the water caches are, when the last time they were updated. We try to seek updates from the hikers on how much is left at each location, so we know when to send someone back to maintain them, collect them at the end of hiking season, because they really don't need to be out there all summer long. The UV rays, if anyone has found a water jug in the middle of the forest that's been there for a while, you'll pick it up and it just deteriorates.
Really?
Yeah. And you don't want to add those microplastics to the environment. So just at the end of the season, removing that from its location is a good idea.
Yes. And one thing, if you do go to Rice Creek to hike, it does not have facilities. And that means no trash can, no restrooms, because in the parking area, which is a little bit off of, I believe it's Highway 100, I could tell some local folks were just dumping trash out there. But there was also unusual smells of people, maybe their pets as well, were using it for substantial restroom activities. So watch your step.
This property does allow hunting, so check the hunting days before you go.
Yeah. Wear your orange.
Mm. Yeah, Hoffman's Crossing. I looked it up. It was, I think, almost 1,900 feet in length. And when I went to it, as you guys said, you're right, that there was a tree that just came down and crashed right through it. It's narrow enough already. It's not something you would jog across.
No.
It's something you'd carefully navigate. And like you said earlier, that's very important to keep in mind.
It was dry when we did it.
Yep.
Oh, really? Was it completely dry?
Yeah, you could tell
that
it was a swamp.
You could see the water level. You can see the lines on the trees and the structure. So you could tell it was usually wet.
And we're getting close in time, but when I do visit Palatka, I do like to stop by Angel's Dining Car. Now, we're not compensated by them, but it is the Florida's oldest diner. If you're on 17, right before you get to the bridge and you're headed south, you look to the right-hand side, and you know, it's stainless steel. And it's pretty much standard diner food. It's pretty good. But they have something there that's, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, a pusilo. And it's basically like their own, tastes kind of like Yoo-hoo, but it's their own little chocolatey. Hmm. Chocolatey drink that they make right there. But yeah, if you want a burger and a shake or you know, the greasy spoon style breakfast, that's your spot. But it's also pretty iconic. I recommend going inside the diner itself to eat.
We'll have to check it out next time. Yeah, we've driven by before, but
we haven't done.
The downtown area is pretty quaint. Last December, I parked and I walked for a couple of hours because there's historic homes. There's like legit gas lamps around. There's an old, it's like a cypress wood mill or something with machinery you could see from the road that's abandoned, but historic houses. There's
lots of murals. Yeah. Lots of old murals all over the place.
Yeah.
When I lived down there, I actually had to, or I was on groups of people that would maintain them and touch them up.
Yeah.
Here and there.
There was like a torpedo, I think, or something. It was all kinds of neat stuff along the riverfront in a neat children's park. So yeah. It was fun to check out.
I mean, one cool thing to mention is the town really is centered. Like you were saying, the steamboats came through there. The town really is centered right on the St. John's River there. And the St. John's River is huge.
It was one of the biggest like hubs in the state pre-Disney and major development at one point, being just like a major port and a rail-to-trail town.
One thing that's interesting about that, too, is the so the St. John's River is the longest river in Florida. It's the headwaters start way north or south of there. And then way north of there, it dumps into the Atlantic where it comes through Jacksonville. And you're talking hundreds of miles. And because it goes into the Atlantic, portions of it are tidal. And the tidal influence actually comes all the way
to Palatka.
To Palatka. Yeah. And that's an interesting fact.
Another thing about town to just note, if you sense a little strange odor in the air, is there is a paper mill not too far away. And that was probably my major complaint when I was living there, was the aroma, especially on cool, humid days. Mm-hmm. For some reason, it stuck around a little more in the mornings. Not very pleasant. It's not as, from what I can tell, as bad as it used to be. They kind of put more equipment into these things to kind of keep the odor at bay. But when we were there last time, I did definitely notice it.
I don't think the paper mill is that great for the St. John's. I'm not sure how they comply with a lot of the pollution regulations. But I've heard some not so great things. But again, it's heard, you know, from they instead of looking up the actual information. But
there's a lot of industry in the area that historically had dumped their waste into the creeks and stuff that lead into the river. Mm-hmm.
And I think what I heard was to get by it, they just pumped it out in the St. John's so it didn't, you know, overwhelm the creeks. The other thing, too, is if you are going down the road to nearby Hastings, which is very close to Palatka, they have this County Line Produce. It's cash only. Every time I drive by, it looks like Black Friday. I mean, there's just cars and people all over the place. And if you're getting the stuff that they grow locally, you get a fantastic deal on, like an entire stalk of Brussels sprouts, you know, that would cost me a fortune at the grocery stores, like, you know, just a few bucks there. Or the celery stalks, it's like the size of each one of those is about what I'd get about three stalks, pay for three stalks at the grocery store, but I pay the same price for this massive one. But I think that's about it. Thanks for listening, everyone. And as always, enjoy Florida responsibly.
Thank you for listening to the Florida Madcaps. We hope today's episode was enjoyable. Your input is important to us. If there is a topic that you would like to know more about, please let us know. The Florida Madcaps is presented in partnership with the Florida Springs Council, the only nonprofit advocacy organization focused solely on protecting our Florida Springs. Get a free spring sticker and join the Florida Springs Council at floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. As a token of our appreciation, we are giving away a free Madcap sticker to anyone who leaves us a review.
All you have to do is send us your contact information to the email provided in our show notes. We will take care of the rest. Thank you for being a part of the Florida Madcaps community.